This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, January 8th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Well, the banks give back far too little and far too late for homeowners who are foreclosed on, and when is a leak, is a whistle, is a crime. Coming up, the trial of Mohamud looms, but what's really on trial is the FBI's entrapment program. We'll be speaking later in the show with Harvey Wasserman about our chance right now, right here almost, in Cascadia, the San Onofre nuclear reactors, 1 and 2, I believe, are set to be decommissioned, and the fight is on the California coast. These are aging nuclear reactors that should have been shut down years ago, and now is our opportunity to finally do what's right. First, though, the weather. Whatever else, know this. It's going to be a wet week. Rain today, rain tomorrow with a high near 53. South winds around 17 miles per hour, gusting up to 28 miles per hour. Tonight, rain mainly late, lows around 44. And those same south-southwest winds pounding us at around 16 miles per hour with gusts up to 26. For tomorrow, more rain, and the temperatures are dropping down to 42, and the snow level also falling to 1,000 feet. More of the south wind driving the weather, 11 to 16, gusting up to 25 for tomorrow night. Rain, possibly mixed with snow showers, cloudy, overcast, lows around 35, and the wind dropping off. Alternative forecast, pretty much the same. It's a waning crescent leaf moon in Scorpio, 26 days old. Synodic forecast, don't plan anything but get to work out there. Biodynamic moon in Scorpio, it's a water sign, leafy plants if you're so inclined. And the sidereal outlet moon in Scorpio, it says a good time for planting, germination, strong, steady growth. Right, exactly. What, with 26 mile an hour winds and the snow level at 1,000 feet? I think not. Before we go to, we're going to be speaking with, of course, Harvey Wasserman on the San Onofre nuclear reactors. And also, we're going to try and reach Ron Seifert with the Toss and Blockade. But first, this from around Cascadia. So much for science when it comes to rivers, forests, and fish. Despite Obama's claim that he would be the science guy, yesterday, 7 federal fishery scientists filed a complaint against Klamath Basin Area Office Manager. Get this. He's the office manager. What? How many? How much experience does this guy have with rivers and fish? Maybe on the weekends, but here's what he does during the week. Office manager Jason Phillips is transferring them and assigning their work, essentially farming it out to the U.S. Geological Survey, not known for its custodial attitude towards the natural world. This because Phillips felt that other agencies and interested parties in the Klamath Basin viewed the research as inherently biased in favor of the Bureau. The Magnificent Seven point out that their supervisors censored their research into the water needs of threatened Klamath Basin salmon because it was viewed by others as biased, violating an Obama administration policy prohibiting political manipulation of science by the federal government. Huh? The Whistleblower Protection Organization Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility who has taken up the cause of the seven, say that they filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Interior Office of the Executive Secretariat and Regulatory Affairs. Wow! Smacks of the old Soviet Union, but there it is. Phillips, the office manager, issued a statement saying the Klamath Area Office frequently reviews operations to make the best use of resources, and the proposed change concerning the fisheries scientists met that goal. He said nobody will lose their job. They'll just be working in a broom closet, that's all. The Obama administration adopted a policy prohibiting political manipulation of science following findings that during the Bush administration, politics influenced the application of science in endangering species management. There you have it. Another crushing disappointment from the Obama administration. But really, I guess it all comes down to an office manager. The University of Oregon Dean of Students, Paul Shang, stood in a trench coat on the top step of the Johnson Hall administrative building yesterday. He was about to be visited by about 50 drumming and singing protesters, most of them Native American. The U of O has an abysmal record insofar as Native Americans, indigenous peoples are concerned. Shang claimed that he was there to hear their concerns and to receive their letters. Well, they had a lot more to deliver than a bunch of letters and some concerns. The crowd of students told him that in various ways that they are dissatisfied by the recent demotion and eventual dismissal of three of the key people representing indigenous people at the U of O from the Office of Equity and Inclusion, the former vice presidents Emilio Hernandez, Carla Gary, and Tom Ball. I tried to reach any one or all of these. Haven't been able to get through, but we may hear from them tomorrow. The demotions are part of a larger restructuring of the office. It's a complicated situation, but the fallout from it is that once again, Indigenous people, who in fact it's Native American land that the U of O is actually built on, have been disenfranchised once again, and they are making efforts now to redress some of those problems. Shang has not exactly been forthcoming on the reasons for the dismissals, and we'll try to keep up with that one. It was a classic too little and too late scenario. Yesterday, homeowners who should have been allowed to stay in their homes instead of suffering robo-sign foreclosure were less than cheered by the news that 10 major banks had agreed to pay nearly $9 billion to settle federal complaints. So the banks, you might ask, who would these be? Big surprise here. Wait for it. J.P. Morgan Chase, that's good old Jamie Dimon, Bank of America and Wells Fargo. They're going to be asked to pay billions to homeowners. The billions, however, are a mere drop in the bucket. What the banks actually made on these fraudulent foreclosures, we'll probably never know. The homeowners are getting a mere pittance. And, of course, as we always say, be it ever so humble, there's no place like home. They are, in fact, out of the homes that they probably spent lives and fortune on caring for. The agreements are the bank's latest step, in any case, towards eliminating hundreds of billions of dollars in potential liabilities. I would say the moral liability still abides. In any case, the financial liability related to the housing crisis at Crest in 2008, it is what got them into the mess in the first place. When they release fourth quarter earnings later this month, the banks hope to reassure investors that they are making progress towards addressing those so-called legacy claims. But advocates say the foreclosure deal allows banks to escape responsibility for damages that might have cost them much more. Indeed. We're still waiting to get. We want to get Ron Seifert on from the Tarsans blockade. This action yesterday in Houston at the offices of Trans Canada capped a week of an action camp that took place down in Texas, where activists from across the country had converged to talk about the strategy and tactics opposing the Keystone XL pipeline. Good morning, Ron. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So, yesterday, the action in Houston. Can you give us an update on that? How the police response? I understand from reports that the police managed to get themselves actively involved.
That's the case. By and large, the urban action in Houston, which targeted headquarters of TransCanada as well as the Keystone XL Pipeline Project office itself, were heavily responded to by the police. It was an excessive show of force, but by and large, the police were civil. There were two arrests. One of those, very questionable arrest. The other was a civil disobedience-oriented arrest, a protester that didn't not want to leave the TransCanada lobby. But larger message, which was successful, is that folks from across the state, from Houston locally to Texas to national allies that came from the far corners of the country, are sending a strong message to TransCanada that enough is enough, that they are directly responsible for the harm being done by this pipeline, by the destruction it's causing along the proposed route, but also the human rights abuses going on in Alberta, Indigenous First Nations communities, as well as along the Gulf Coast, where communities largely of color, minority communities, are being disproportionately impacted by emissions of this toxic slurry.
Yeah, it's a question. It comes down to environmental justice. It always, inevitably, is the case that it's Indigenous people's land that is befouled by these enterprises, and it's always the poor through whose neighborhoods, communities, the worst, most egregious polluters manage to set up shop, taking advantage of the fact that poor people generally spend all their time struggling to maintain food and shelter and don't have a great deal of time or resources to engage in activism or legal action against these companies. Taking the Indigenous peoples in Canada are really beginning to organize and mobilize their efforts there. What do you see next? There are still lawsuits going on down there. I think it's Michael Bishop's managed to hold them off for a little while. But what's the next phase, and what's the tar sands blockade's next move?
Well, certainly there are some legal avenues worth pursuing here regarding precedents against the use of eminent domain for private gain and the fraud that TransCanada has deployed during their process of acquiring land. But largely what yesterday meant was a debut of new tactics and a new strategic arm that these corporate entities are going to be held directly accountable, that these are human beings choosing to profit from the suffering of others, from the destruction of the planet. This isn't some abstract corporate entity. These are actual people making these decisions to poison and destroy homes and, you know, send poisonous air into the lungs of innocent children. They're doing that for profit, and they need to be held directly accountable, not just here in Texas, but across the country. As we saw yesterday, solidarity actions from Michigan, from Wisconsin, from Massachusetts, from Colorado. These corporations have offices all over the place, and for this movement to really grow, we need folks to join in from their home states, find out how they can have a direct impact on TransCanada's world, and take action to send a clear message that we will not tolerate this type of abuse, that this pipeline is too dangerous to exist, that we cannot continue to sacrifice the most traditionally marginalized communities any longer.
We can't, you know, we literally can't afford it. We are we somehow having utterly raped the environment, the present. Now we are forging ahead and doing the same to the environment in the future, for future generations. It's extraordinary, and yet the efforts of the tar sands blockades have really, I think, galvanized activists across the nation. It is down to us. It is our responsibility to stand up. Thank you so much for that, Ron. We will be speaking tomorrow, of course, with Tom Devine about the arrest and the sentencing of former CIA officer John Kiriakou when it's a leak is a whistle is a crime. The Mohammed Mahmoud trial begins on Thursday. Psychologists who examined who interviewed him back in at the end of November have a great deal to say about the techniques used by the FBI in interrogating, in setting him up, and the way that the fallout from their actions has affected the way this whole trial is set up. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, January 8, 2013. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson's the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, we'll have a report on U.S. meddling in Syria. And President Obama grants the National Security Agency 5 more years to carry out warrantless wiretapping while you were getting ready to welcome in the new year. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. And we turn our attention first to the situation in Syria. And we're joined on the telephone by Reese Ehrlich. Reese Ehrlich has been covering the situation for some time. And along with the Arab Spring, he has been on this program before. And we're delighted to have him back. And well, Reese Ehrlich, congratulations on your work being recognized by the Society of Professional Journalists, your work on this region, and we're glad to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Dennis.
All right, well, let's begin with your best effort to tell us where the situation is right now. What can you tell us about